Everyone, and welcome back to another wonderful episode of Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. We are so excited to have our guests on today, one returning, one new, and to talk to us about this very, very cool opera, Seder, I mean, just experience that's happening here in New York City. Joining us to talk to us about that, we have the composer Avner Finberg and the playwright, librettist, and director, Edward Einhorn. They're here to talk to us about the show Exegod. It's playing April 26th through May 12th at La Mama's Ellen Stewart Theater, and you can get your tickets and more information by visiting lamama.org. We are very excited to dive more into the show. Trust me, when you hear more about this opera, it's going to blow your mind what they're doing with this story. So let's go ahead and welcome on our guest. Avner, welcome to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. Edward, welcome back. It's so good to see you.
Thank you. Great to see you as well.
Thank you so much for inviting us. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm so excited to have both of you here. Edward, I'm so excited you've got this new work to share with us. And I'm so excited to learn more about this opera you've all created based on the historic story and particularly the time that you're doing it at. So I'm doing a very terrible job of explaining what this is. So Edward, why don't we start with you as the playwright, librettist, and director. Can you tell us a little bit about Exegod?
Sure. So about 15 years ago, I discovered that there was this play written in 200 BCE by a Jewish playwright. He was in ancient Alexandria, and he was writing in Greek and in the tradition of Greek drama. And it was called Exegod. And it's about, it was a, like his version of Exodus that he was writing to bring that story to the people of Alexandria. So I was sort of fascinated with that. And I found a book that had fragments of it and the history of it. And I thought, I want to put this on stage. And so I approached La Mama, and they were interested. And then we got close to the time it was supposed to go up, and I realized I had no idea how to fill in the gaps in the fragment. And so I asked if I could do another Greek, like I had done an adaptation of Iphigenia and Aulis, so I did that, and I sort of pondered it. And then I got involved in opera writing, and my first opera was with Avner. We did a one act called The Taste of Damnation. And that led me to thinking about Exegod as an opera and turning the text into opera, like the ancient text into opera, but putting it in the framework of a modern Seder where people are experiencing the Seder because that actually fills out the story of Exodus, and also having like a drama at that Seder. And the drama that interested me, so the part of the history of this play is that it was destroyed by the Jewish elders because a theater was considered idolatry. And beyond that, it was a pagan, it involved pagan imagery. So there's a phoenix that appears, which was the symbol of Alexandria, and it's the Deus Ex Machina in the original play. And Ezekiel was trying to connect Jewish and pagan society, but that was not a popular thing with everyone. So eventually it was destroyed. And so then I thought about this conflict about the composer, who is not actually based on Avner at all, but the composer coming home to Passover Seder and bringing his girlfriend, who is from a Muslim background. She's agnostic, but she's from a Muslim background, and dealing with the conflict again between societies and our attempts to merge those societies and the way it often ends disastrously, and yet why one might still want to try to do so.
Wow, what a story. What a journey as well. That is fantastic. Now, Avner, I would love to know, how is it that you came upon this piece?
Well, it's very simple. Coming back on the subway from the premiere of our first opera, Edward just told me, hey, do you want to write this other story I have in mind? And I was listening to it and was like, I don't get it. But it sounds very interesting. It sounds complicated. Like, you need to hear it a few times. You need to hear this concept played. But it just seemed like there's a lot of potential in it. And then I just decided it sounds interesting. The other thing that I really liked about this project in particular was that it was happening in, like, the Exegod happens in Egypt, but it's also, you can think about this as the Egypt of the Greeks and not really the same ancient Egyptians that you have in the play and the, sorry, the story of the Exodus that everybody knows. And that led me thinking about the music that you would find there. So it would have been Roman music. And the thing about Roman music that it was actually destroyed by the Christians. And in a way, it was just like forgotten and nobody really knows what it is, what it sounds like. Or people don't, haven't heard for being played for centuries. Recently, a few fragments of notation were found, and they're kind of an early form of music notation. So you can sort of tell what they would sound like, because you also know what the scale would have sounded like. People, they're like ancient instruments were found. I was listening to these, and I just realized, you know, it really reminds me of a lot of contemporary types of music that you would find today in the Middle East. I was born in Israel and lived there until I was in my 20s. So one thing I remember as a kid was my grandfather sitting and watching the Egyptian movies being played every Friday night. That was a thing. They were kind of like, Cairo was kind of like the Bollywood of the Middle East. So you would have a lot of these kind of scenes with the belly dancing and the Arab orchestra playing, and it was really kind of like part of our culture too. So I thought Egyptian music sounds amazing. It actually sounds kind of, in some ways, close to this ancient kind of music. Another kind of sound similar might be even Greek traditional music that, you know, came out of ancient Greek music as well. And, you know, these genres, I thought it'd be really cool to incorporate like these scale, these rhythms into the opera. And they'd kind of find their way in some of the scenes. But you kind of, you know, it's, if you don't really know what it sounds like, maybe you wouldn't understand. It is an Egyptian opera just because it's also written in my style. So that was kind of like what kind of really brought me into this project and kind of tickled my imagination.
That is fascinating. I love that. I have no idea regarding the music styles between the two, like how similar they were. That's amazing. Edward, let me come back to you because I'm curious to know, you know, as we are, what, about a week away from the show premiering at the time of this recording, what has it been like developing the piece?
It has been a great experience. So, you know, it's an interesting mixture. We have three actors, we have three singers, we have three puppeteers, because there's a lot of puppetry in the piece. And then there is six musicians. And so a lot, everybody comes from different worlds a little bit. And a lot of the time we rehearse separately. So the first week was actually exhausting for me, because I went from the singers like working on the music to the puppeteers working on the puppetry to the actors working on the scenes. And I had these 12-hour days. Nobody else did. But you know, their days were split into like whatever, 6 hours. But I was going from, or 3 hours, I was going from place to place to place to work with everyone. And then now it's finally coming together into one piece, which is a little more, oddly, it's gotten a little more restful in week three. And it's been really nice to see all the elements come together. Though now we have one more element. Yesterday we did the orchestra, first orchestral rehearsal, and that was really beautiful to hear. And now then next week we'll have to incorporate that, and of course the sound and the lights and the everything that happens once you go in the theater. So there will be no rest. And the food, that's all. Tomorrow we have to bring in some food to start working with the food, because that's a whole other department of work, because we're serving a seder in the theater. So we have 18 seats that are going to get the full experience. And then on the risers, you'll get some partial, you know, food. So when you, about a day before the show, you get an opportunity to sign up to be in the very interactive part of the Seder. So you will be given all the foodstuffs, but also expected to sing along with the Passover songs and read along with it. We have our own Haggadah that we made for the show. I don't know if I have one right here, but it's really, it's going to be elaborate.
That sounds amazing, though. What an experience audiences will have the opportunity to have. That's amazing. Avner, let me come back to you to start off this next question. I'm curious to know, with this great piece inspired by, this historical work from millennia ago, if you will, what is the message or thought you're hoping that audiences take away from Exagogue?
Well, it is an opera, right? So, as I know, a lot of your audience might not be on the opera side. I just want to let everybody know too that this is not going to be a 3 hour or 4 hour grand opera. The opera side is made into very small scenes that are incorporated in the play, and each one is up to 10 minutes long, 5 to 10 minutes long. In a way, it's a very easy to listen to kind of opera in that way. And so, even if you really have never heard opera before, this is a great kind of introduction to this world, I think. And another thing is just that it's a really beautiful combinations of all the elements, because we have not just the puppeteers and the actors, but we have these amazing set that makes you feel like you are part of this whole process. Basically, the audience is part of the play. And you just like become a part of it just by diving into this, the book, the Haggadah. That's basically, it just kind of takes you through this journey as well. It's a really amazing experience, I think. It's really hard to describe in words what it will be like to be there. I guess we'll just have to wait and see when we go there on opening night what it's like, because all these elements will finally come together.
Fantastic answer there. Love that. Edward, what about you? What message or thought are you hoping audiences take away?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I talk about this as being a hopeful opera, because even though things can go badly, and like certainly the community in Alexandria, went badly. Eventually, like 200 years or 300 years later, they were massacred, and there's a conflict on stage, and it doesn't seem to be maybe going the best as either. But you also have this story of Exodus, and which is innately a hopeful story. And there's this end to the Passover Seder, where everyone says like next year in Jerusalem, which is not about the modern day Israel, but about this idea of next year in a place where all our hopes and dreams are fulfilled. And it's a symbolic idea, which is like those symbols, perhaps never quite achievable, but also worth hoping for. And so, I mean, I feel like we're in difficult times, in difficult times in all sorts of ways. And some of those themes like resonate with the opera, even though it's not about the opera is not about that. But I think it's important to have hope always. And I hope. My hope is that this opera also provides hope in the end, despite acknowledging the difficulties of life in the world.
That is such a lovely idea, such a lovely message. Thank you for sharing that. And that brings us to my final question for this first part, which is, who do you hope have access to this great opera, Exagogue? And Edward, I'm going to go and start first with you, if I may.
Well, obviously, you always want as many people as possible to come into the theater to see it. I mean, I feel like the nice thing about this is that there are a lot of like niche audiences that are maybe, drawn in. I mean, the Jewish audience, of course, but also like the opera audience, the puppetry audience, the audience who enjoys interactive theater. The audience that's interested in classical work and the history of, Alexandria, people who are interested in downtown work, all those things. And, also because there's like a character from this Muslim background, I'm trying to bring in people also who have a connection to that. And so I feel like it has the opportunity to appeal to a very diverse group of people, both regular theater goers and non, and people new to the theater and people new to opera. I mean, I think it's a really, I've had a few people being like, oh, say, oh, I don't know if I like opera because they envision, 4 hours of Götterdämmerung or at 6 hours of Götterdämmerung or however long Wagner goes on. This is not that. This is opera that it sort of introduces you to like the possibilities of opera and modern opera.
That is wonderful. Wonderful. Abner, bring us home on this. Who do you hope have access to this opera?
Yeah, it's funny you were mentioning Götterdämmerung because for me, spending 6 hours at the Met is like the best time ever, but I'm sure it's not for everyone. I think this actually talking to about this audience make me think, this would be a great show for younger audiences, teenagers and kids who are, like in middle school. It's like there's something about this show which is really accessible for a younger audience as well, even though it is kind of an experimental theater, is very hopeful. It has a great message about hope and understanding of like other people's perspectives. So I'm really hoping to see younger people in the audience as well.
Well, on the second part of our interview, we'd love to let our listeners get a chance to get to know our guest a little bit better, pick your brains, if you will. And I want to jump to my favorite question to ask guests. I'm really excited to hear your answers. And that, of course, is what is your favorite theater memory? Or, Edward, in your case, what's another of your favorite theater memories?
I wonder, maybe I will talk about one of my favorite opera memories, which was in the Prototype series, and the name of it was The Scarlet Ibis. It was I'm trying to look up the libretto was by David Coady, and it was composed by Stefan Wiseman, and it had puppets by Tom Lee, who was actually also our set designer and making a few puppets for our show. And I think about it because it was not a big show. It was in here, which was, I guess like 150 seats. And it was very intimate. The orchestra was about the same size as our show. And yet it connected in a way that I feel like is important for modern opera to connect. I feel like, I mean, Abner talked about loving being in the Metropolitan Opera. I also love being in the Metropolitan Opera, maybe not for Götterdämmerung, but for other pieces. I mean, it's a beautiful space. It's an awesome, experience. And I mean that in, feeling with one with awe. It's terrific. But my hope for modern opera is that it can connect more intimately. And I think in order to survive as an art form that is also changing and becoming something new, it's important to find new ways for opera to exist. Because, there, how many new operas get done at the Met? I mean, a few more now than before, but like, in the last decade, like less than 10. So I think that what I really loved about seeing The Scarlet Ibis is that it found a way that felt purely operatic and very theatrical to convey the grand ideas and emotions of an opera on a small scale. And so that's where I come what comes to mind right now today.
That is a fabulous memory. I love that. Thank you for sharing that. Avner, what about you? What is your favorite theater memory?
Well, since we're still on the opera side, I'll also talk about my favorite opera memory. One of the great moments, I think that also was a tipping moment for opera in this city, was a performance of Ligeti's Le Grand Macabre in 2010. I don't know if anybody remembers that. It was actually done at the New York Phil and not the Met. It was just incredible. So this is an opera kind of about the apocalypse, but it's also like a social parody, and it has a smorgasbord of musical ideas. It's very funny and creative, and they did it with a very small set. It had also kind of some kind of puppetry in it. It was very, very minimal, but yet you can definitely get the whole story as an audience member. And the thing is that the Avery Fisher Hall was sold out for all 3 nights of that contemporary opera. The novelty was just, it was never happened before, but it was like, wow, I can't believe that. Because it's usually not even sold out for a regular concert, not nearly sold out. So that was quite a moment. You know, and another play, actually, I was thinking about a play called The Pillow Man by Martin McDonagh, I think his name is. I saw that play at London's National Theatre, like when I was, I think, a teenager. And that's another play that has kind of a few levels of depth and kind of rethinks the whole space of the stage, because there is an interrogation happening at the front of the stage. And then at some point you just get like lights into the back of the stage where you see like a family story of these two brothers kind of unwind. It's just an incredible experience. It kind of shows you what's the potential of theater and how that's, you know, this genre can really evolve. And just going back to Götterdämmerung, you know, the biggest and biggest of operas. So it was about six, that's like about 6 hours. Now, on a personal note, you know, when I first met my now wife, then girlfriend, we were going to go on our second date. And then I just looked and I just remembered I had tickets to see Götterdämmerung. And I had to reschedule our date. And she apparently, it was like a thing with her friends that I was known as the opera guy, because I bailed on her to see a 6 hour opera. So in German, so yeah, that's my story about opera.
Those are amazing. I love that. I love that. I'd love to know what your now wife has to say about rescheduling the day.
Oh, I still hear about it every day. Don't worry.
Thank you for sharing that. Thank you both for sharing those wonderful memories. As we wrap things up, I would love to know, do either of you have any other projects or productions coming on the pipeline that we might be able to plug for you?
I can talk about a couple things coming up. For the Václav Havel Center, I run something called the Rehearsal for Truth Theater Festival, which is plays from Central and Eastern Europe. We have things from Romania, the Czech Republic, Slovakia, Belarus, Ukraine, all sorts of places. And there's a reading series May 17th to June 3rd. And then there are main festivals June 12th to 23rd, and that's at rehearsalfortruth.org. And then also for the theater company, we are having a one-night showing of our yearly show, Cabaret in Captivity, which is songs and sketches written in Terezin during the Holocaust. It's going to be Yom HaShoah, which is Holocaust Remembrance. And this year, I guess this is our 11th year that we've done this. It's going to be at the Jersey City Theater Center in Jersey City, which is beautiful. It's like a very easy ride via the PATH train and a really beautiful area. So this is our first time in New Jersey. And so but it's a nice place to perform.
That sounds fantastic. Oh, that's exciting. Congrats on that win, too. Wonderful to hear. Abner, anything for you?
Oh, well, there's nothing in the immediate future, as also operas take a very long time to compose. So instead of like, you know, really being waiting for the next thing, I would just maybe let your listeners know about some of my CDs. I have this CD called The Four Seasons of Isolation that I wrote during the pandemic. I'm also a violinist. So I perform the whole piece on violin with live electronics. It's a very enjoyable scene, a piece that reverberates the ideas from Vivaldi's Four Seasons and kind of puts them together with electronics. So also, you know, just follow me on Spotify. I'll know about any future concerts coming up.
That's also very exciting. Very cool. So it leads to my final question, which is if our listeners would like more information about Exagogue or about either of you, maybe they'd like to reach out to you, how can they do so?
Well, I can give three websites. So my own is edwardeinhorn.com. My theater company is untitledtheater.com, theater with an ER. And the third one would be to go to lamama.org to find out about the show.
Avner, anything for you?
Oh, yes. Please just go to avnerfinberg.com and you'll see information about both this opera and a previous collaboration, A Taste of Damnation. I think the entire opera, Taste of Damnation, can be viewed on the website at this moment. The production we did at Manhattan School of Music. And you also see a list of my albums and other compositions, and there's a way of contacting me there.
Fabulous. Well, Avner, Edward, thank you both so much for taking the time to speak with me and for sharing this beautiful opera, this wonderful experience. I'm very, very excited for it. So thank you both for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My guests today have been the composer Avner Finberg and the playwright, librettist, and director Edward Einhorn, who join us to talk about their new opera, their new work, Exagogue, which is playing April 26th through May 12th at LaMama's Ellen Stewart Theater. You can get your tickets and more information by visiting lamama.org. We also have some contact information for our guests, which we'll be posting on our episode description, as well as on our social media posts. But make sure you head over now to lamama.org and get your tickets for this wonderful new work. Again, it's Exagogue playing April 26th through May 12th. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off your cell phones, unwrap your candies,
And keep talking about the theater.
in a stage whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.